And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
I'm with Laura Evans. Like Evans Chicken, but you heard that already. Let me think about announcements quick. July 27th in Wappingers Falls, I'm hosting the James's Warriors Music Festival. That's 9.5 hours. It starts at noon, ends at 9:30. There's 6 bands. And I have to fill the 15 minutes when they change, which if you do the math, the bands do 1 hour and 15 and I have to do 1.5 hours. And the bands made the t-shirt and I did not. How is that fair? Just kidding. I don't care. James's Warriors is an amazing organization. They present to schools and other institutions, creating awareness around the prevention of suicide and the removal of stigma for mental health, specifically teen suicide, but any suicide. So I'm behind that. And then on August 24th, I should have asked you to play underneath me. Oh, I'm almost done. I'll shut up after this. On August 24th, the Lifted Project is performing at the Hope Rocks Festival. We'll be at the Village. You know about Hope Rocks?
No.
It's a cool organization. They also raise awareness around substance abuse and suicide. And they hold this big music festival up in Schenectady. And they have a village like where resources can present beforehand. So there's like a kind of like a barn, and you go in the barn, everybody has tables and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And so Lifted Project, you know about Lifted Project?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Lifted Project will be there to answer questions. And then at 4:30, we're kind of presenting how we did it and performing. So there's those two dates. On September 7th, I have a shitty musician story. You ready?
Okay.
On September 7th, I am performing at my high school reunion, but you don't care unless you went to high school with me.
I just went to mine like 2 days ago.
Did you really?
Yeah. Well, no, it was the 4th. Sorry, it was a week ago.
I'm going to stop and talk now. Sorry.
Yeah.
Want to hear a shitty musician story?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, Laura is a musician, so you get behind this.
Yes, I've known some, so.
Oh, okay. So we should. You're down by me in Westchester, right?
No, I'm actually in Millbrook.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, in Dutchess.
But you're teaching.
That I'm teaching down.
Okay, all right, but you live up here.
Yeah.
So up here, the musicians are all amazing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, like, I was stunned.
It's
well, it's part of the reason I wanted to move to the county, but well, up here in Dutchess County.
Right.
But I was stunned with the amount of live music.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of live music and everybody's really good.
Yeah, and nobody's really paid for that, but there's a lot.
Okay, we're gonna fill this 1.5 hours quick. Because I have a theory about that. But the other thing is up here. Have you played down in Westchester?
No, not really. Well, a little bit, like here and there, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a lot to do down there. First off,
I also wasn't playing back too much when I lived in Westchester.
Right, right. So up here, the musicians all support each other and. It's really great. The Lifted Project, I sent out invitations and everybody said yes before there was even a song written. So, which is like, they're just like, yeah, we want to support and help. They're so supportive up here. Mm-hmm. Down in Westchester, I bumped into a few shitty musicians. One guy, I won't use your name because I'm nice, but one guy, like, I went to a coffee shop. I was doing coffee houses and I went to a coffee shop where he like apparently was already doing coffee and like I didn't know. And he like ripped me like 4 times on Facebook, like, hey, do your own work. And blah, blah. I'm like, bro, just everybody calm down.
Wow. I've had the opposite happen up here, you know, where somebody's doing a gig and I go up and I start talking to them and they're like, yeah, you should do this gig.
Yeah.
You would love this gig.
Jimmy Lee, I had him on the show. And when he's like, do you play out? And I'm like, I don't really play out that much because I'm in Westchester. And by the time I get done, it's a drive and I don't go out past 7 o'clock at night anyway. So he goes, when we leave, he goes, do you want to play out? And I'm like, I thought you meant with him. And I'm like, sure. I'm like, if somebody invites me, I'll do it because I kind of feel like it's rude if you don't. So he calls me 2 days later. He got a gig here in September, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, holy crap. How nice is that? So I'm playing my high school reunion, right? So we have Rhinebeck Central High School, class of 81. And they said, you know, would you do the music? And I'm like, that's psychologically traumatizing, but okay, I'll do it, right? So they announce, you know, hey, John Burton's going to be doing the music, whatever, right? This girl that I dated in high school writes the committee and says, hey, and she's also a musician in Rhinebeck. And she goes, but she's a class ahead of me because she's older than me. And sorry, I felt the need to say that. She writes to the committee and says, I want to play 2 hours after John. Meaning like, you know, so John can open for me. And I'm like, honey, you weren't. Is that not the shittiest move in the history of musician moves?
Yeah.
Right? That's
that is.
That's pretty shitty.
That is. It's not Hudson Valley after you.
Right.
Which is more what it's like Chippendale. I'm really dating myself, but Chippendale, the Chipmunks.
Oh, sure.
After you, very polite.
Yeah.
The musicians up here.
Yeah.
I meet a musician, you know, we become friends on Facebook just, you know, after saying two words, and they're liking and loving all of my posts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How sweet is that?
Yes.
The reason I'm hot about it is they just wrote me this morning about it, and they're like, what do you want to do? They're like, we're not going to let her, you know, you're not going to be her opener. What do you want to do? And so I said, well, I'll tell you what, she can play two songs and open for me. How's that?
There you go.
There you go, right?
That's problem, what you call instant karma.
All right, enough about me. I'm tired of my own voice. You're a piano player?
Yes.
What else do you play? Everything, because you're a music teacher.
Yeah, I'm a music teacher, so I play a lot of instruments, but most of them quite badly.
Do you play guitar?
I play guitar fairly badly. Fairly. Only because I don't play it enough. I can't press the strings down. Like, I know how to do the chords, but, you know, you have to have calluses.
You got to build the calluses up. Yeah.
I don't. I play flute well. I studied flute a lot, but no one's ever like, hey, I need a flutist.
A flutist.
Oh, really? Okay.
I played at New Paul's. Mm-hmm. They have a park there, and it was Memorial Day like 2 years ago or something. So I play there. And this guy is sitting in a crowd. He's 912 years old. And he's so New Paul's. He's got the tie-dye t-shirt. He's got the gray ponytail. And the smell of weed is wafting through the air. And I'm playing.
Sounds like a song.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm playing and this guy stands up. Everybody's sitting. This guy stands up and he raises his hand and he's got a flute. And I'm in the middle of a song. And he goes, can I? And I'm like, I'm not going to say no. Like,
that puts you in an awkward position.
It does.
You're probably thinking, hopefully he can play this thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I'm like, I don't even know if you can carry it. Like, he's feeble. I'm like, I don't even know if you can carry a flute, let alone play it. But I'm not going to say no. So he comes up. Guy destroyed. Knew every song I knew. Destroyed. He was so good. And I'm like, I got to find a flute player, man, because I sound so much better with a flute. So your phone may ring.
There you go. And I don't, you know, I sing too. So, and obviously I teach chorus, and that's a whole different story how I ended up singing, because I never really considered myself a singer.
How'd you end up singing?
Because I started gigging, and that's a whole other story too.
Okay.
I've had a long path to get where I am. If you want,
get me at the beginning.
Tell you the story. Yep. So I was a very musical kid. I played everything.
Where'd you grow up?
Hamilton, New York.
Okay.
It's where Colgate University is.
Yep.
My parents are professors. My mother was a pipe organist, and actually a well-known pipe organist. We used to say it's an oxymoron to be a a famous organist.
Right, right.
But if it's possible, she was.
Okay.
I mean, till to this day, I could go up to a church organist and say my mother's name, and they would know her. So
cool.
Yeah. So and then I went to college.
No pressure there, right?
Ended up going to Berklee College of Music, fell in love with jazz. But I started out with classical. I was at SUNY Binghamton, did this huge classical recital.
How'd you like SUNY Binghamton?
I loved it.
Hey, Gramercy, she's my daughter. Hey, Gramercy, I'm with a lady who's professional teacher and musician who went to SUNY. So maybe we forget North Carolina. She wants to go to North Carolina. No, maybe we forget North Carolina for the first year. Go to a SUNY, figure out this college
thing. SUNYs are excellent. We're very fortunate to have such an amazing state university system. We are. And I had a great time at Binghamton, but then I'd done all this classical stuff. And I'm like, I really want to play jazz now. And my friends were saying, you're crazy because you're just ripping it up on as classical pianist, because I was very technically advanced, whatever.
Right.
But I wanted to do jazz. So I went to Berklee College of Music, which is where you go to learn jazz.
And, where one goes.
And pop and all of that. And I did all of that. And then I ended up in New York. I moved to New York to play. I was playing in clubs, this and that. Smoky clubs, if you remember back then.
Yeah,
clubs
man.
Were smoky. It wasn't really my thing. Staying up till 1 a.m. wasn't my thing. And so then I ended up getting married, having kids, all of this. And in the middle of that, getting a master's degree in music from Brooklyn College, because I lived in Brooklyn then, in classical piano again, mm-hmm. and then going to NYU and getting a PhD in composition. I just wanted to, I'm like that, I wanted to explore everything and learn everything. So now I get out of school and I'm, I think, like 32.
Okay.
Right? And I had just gotten divorced. And I had two kids to take care of.
Ooh.
And I'm musically...
Single mom with two kids.
I'm musically gutted.
Right.
Because I've done every style of music. I have no idea what I want to write, what I want to play. I'm just overly saturated with all kinds of music and all kinds of criticism, critique, suggestions. Don't write anything with two cellos in it. Don't recapitulate. What genre is this? What genre is that? And just, I didn't know where to go. I just didn't know what to do. And I was single mom and life was very, very tough.
Mm.
And I went through a lot of situations with people who, were abusive. I've had many abusive situations in my life.
Relationships.
Different types of situations, including relationships.
Okay. And professional too?
Then professionally to some degree.
Right.
But just basically by the time I got to this point in my life, I was just broken down. I mean, sort of gutted in every way. And I also had problems with my thyroid and not doctors to properly address it or, you know, anything to help me.
Right.
Even though I knew something was wrong with me, it took me decades to find the right doctor. And so that caused me to have depression as well, and depression and anxiety and...
I know from that.
You know about that. You've heard of that.
I have a brushing familiarity with that.
And I knew with me that there was a real chemical basis to it. I knew that. My instincts told me, but no doctor would listen to me. And it took me decades. So that also kind of felt like an abusive element in my life. Like I wasn't being taken seriously.
Right.
I wasn't being listened to. So by the time I explored all this and thought it all out, and I was kind of this little empty pile of whatever, I met my current husband, and you know, we started a life together. And I found a good thyroid doctor, and I got healthy. And so I'm kind of starting my life over again. And the reason that we moved up
here—how long are you married this time so far?
So we've been married, about 8 years. I've been with him 11 years.
Wow. Okay. How's it going?
It's great.
That's good.
It's great, and he really wants me to be happy. And he's
also nice.
One of the few people in my life ever who really wants me to be happy.
That's so funny. I just...
Like, even you think of friends and stuff. Sometimes your friends don't exactly want you to be happy.
Yes. Your friend... Only if they're happy do they want you to be happy. And then probably not.
Right.
I was just writing about that this morning. I'm like, I think one of the highest... points that you can get in humanity is to be able to celebrate somebody else's success. And even higher than that is to be able to celebrate somebody else's success when you're not as successful as you necessarily want to be. I think that's like elevated humanity.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. And to love someone properly, you really have to want what is best for them. Not what you want them to be, not what you think is best for them.
Right.
That's what a lot of people do. They think they love someone for what's best for them, but it's what they think is best
right.
for them.
Right. Yep.
So yeah. If I think that you would love to ski and like that is going to make you happy.
You're built to ski. I'm going to take you, Laura. We're skiing.
I don't ski.
I don't either, actually.
No, I'm too afraid to break legs and I hear too many stories like that. My life is too busy to break legs. So
I surfed but part of my wedding vows were I was like an aggressive surfer, but I wasn't a good enough surfer to be as aggressive as I was. So it was dangerous. If you have the skill to be doing that stuff, great, go do it. I didn't have the skill and I was trying to do it anyway.
But you're an aggressive surfer. You can do the thing where you punch the shark in the face.
I have never punched a shark, but because back when I was surfing.
Which as a vegan is okay because you're defending yourself.
Okay, all right. Thank you. So we can punch animals. We just can't eat it. Because I'm not going to kill a shark with a punch anyway.
No.
I'm just going to.
Yeah.
So when in my marriage vows was you're not going to surf anymore. Monogamy was not in my marriage vows, but surfing was. How bizarre is that? Wow. So I surfed for forever. So then my brother-in-law says, hey, you know, you surfed. And he's a big snowboarder. He's like, why don't we go snowboarding? And I'm like, yeah, that's perfect for me. I can snowboard, right? Trace, it's okay to snowboard. Yeah, you can snowboard. So I get on a snowboard. And what's Putnam County? Thunder Ridge? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think so.
So I spent one complete day on my ass. I couldn't do it to save my life. And when I got home, like literally like sitting down was painful. So I don't do that either.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, that's the way I think of making someone happy is to really find out, you know, what do
right.
you want? And to go with that. And my husband and I, our relationship's gotten better every year that we've been together. It's gotten even better and
that's
better
good.
And better and better. We decided to move up here because it was my fantasy to have a farm. I always wanted a farm.
Mm.
And he said, what am I going to do up here in the middle of nowhere? There's a little problem here because I work in the city.
Right.
And I said, well, you hate your job, so you're not going to do that anymore. So let's figure out something. And our house was perfect to open a dog boarding daycare.
Oh, wonderful.
So we have a finished basement that's like set up like a dog living room with leather sofas and stuff like that that people donate to us. And the dogs sleep together there like a family, hang out there, watch
TV.
Oh,
that's cool.
And then it opens into a 2-acre fenced pasture. Which is secure. So the dogs, it's like a
what's the name of the
dog? It's called Dog Meadow, and we're in Millbrook.
And how do I get you?
Dogmeadow.com.
Okay.
People always want a card, and we're like, it's dogmeadow.com. And you just,
we're
who
the has
only
cards
dog
anymore?
Meadow. Right. I know. It's like Dog Meadow. Just remember that.
I had somebody, it's so funny. I'm trying to think about how to say this politely. I had somebody give me a card the other day, and I'm like, I don't even know what to do with this anymore. Like, what do you do with a card? I'm just going to put it in my phone, so just tell me.
We have them all over our house. They're just, I don't know what to do with them either. Maybe make an artistic thing out of them.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm not visually artistic, but if I were, I don't know.
That's why I hate that I can't.
Epoxy them all together and put some swirly
build a wall. There.
Yeah.
can you draw?
No, I'm really, really bad at visual arts of all sorts.
It's so weird, because I'm like okay at like graphic design, but I can't draw to save my fucking life, and it makes me crazy because I would love to be able to draw. I think
you're talking about so that's a technique, like and you can be an artist without having technique in certain areas, right?
So, I guess, but I want to be able to draw. I want you to be sitting there and me to talk to you and sketch you.
Just be able to do. I know I've always wanted to do that too.
I can't.
I'm not the person to talk to about that because I have no idea how people do that. But I think one of the things that coming out of all this art made me think about, I think that for musicians and artists, we have a huge bunch of quandaries. And one of them is the fact that you need to remember that each person owns their own artistic experience, but that includes a listener. So if you put on a Pink Floyd album and you listen to it, you are an artist as a listener. You have your own artistic experience, what you appreciate, what you enjoy, what you pay attention to, because there's a million things to pay attention to. So all of the, what your focus is, you might even listen to a lot of different songs and know who all the artists are or know the, how the patterns are similar. So everyone owns their own artistic experience.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're saying I'm creating an experience out of what you're giving me, so I'm an artist too.
Yeah. And you'll create a completely different experience than someone else will.
Never thought about it like that before. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And yeah. I'll never forget when I was a teenager once, I turned on the radio and there was a song playing. And I thought to myself, oh, I love this song. And my brother says, I hate this song. And we started having a conversation about it. And that's sort of what got me thinking about that. But that's really become true for me now.
Because what do you think causes you to, causes a person, you're a music teacher. We should say that. You're a music teacher.
Yeah.
What do you think causes a person to like one song and not like another song?
I think your individual preferences.
But what's that preference based on?
I think it's probably based on a lot, your past experience, what you've done.
Studio apart, sorry.
You know, so what you've done in your life, what you've experienced, what you've sang, what you've played.
But you're picking that stuff, right? So
yeah,
I have a theory.
Sure.
All right, yeah, let me run my theory by you.
Okay.
Ah, this is making me nervous. I'm giving my theory to a teacher. so my theory is, because like you're exposed to all kinds of music and you whittle it down to what, like what you said, you were up to here with all kinds of music and had to whittle it down. My theory is music is vibration, right? Mm-hmm. To make a sound, you got to have a vibe. You got to create a wave. It's vibrating. Mm-hmm. We are vibration. You're vibrating. There's electrical impulses going through you. It's what makes your heart work. It's what makes your brain work. You're a battery vibrating too.
And there's probably a lot of things that I'm communicating to you that you cannot see or hear or by any of your basic senses, but something.
But I'm picking up your vibe.
Yes. That's right. What we call a vibe. Yes.
Yeah. So my theory is you like music that's vibrating on the same wavelength as you are. And you don't like music that's vibrating on a different wavelength than you do. Because you like classical music at a young age.
Right.
Right. So mm-hmm. you, and by the way, I also think there are people who vibrate at a frequency where they just plain old like music. Like almost all kinds of music. Like your vibe.
I'm more of a like all kinds of music.
Right. So you're at that frequency level where
I
like.
Mean, the old lady around the corner teaches you classical piano.
Right.
You go for lessons. That's how I got into classical music. But I do
from
love
the old lady around
music. I love all kinds of music, and that's sort of my problem.
So you operate on a like kind of like a wide open in Bertonian music theory. You operate on kind of like this. Your body vibrates on the kind of level like a wider wave.
I'm also that way with people. Like I like
you like all kinds of people. Okay,
yeah.
So you vibrate on that that frequency. And there's some people who just vibrate on like a jazz frequency.
Right.
And so the other stuff is inherently out of sync with them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What are we thinking?
No, I could see that. I could absolutely see that.
A teacher approved my theory.
You also need to have, there is technique and you need technical knowledge to appreciate something. So my husband's an artist. He went to art school and all that. And he's a photographer artist. And he talk about sketch and all that. He is the king of that. He's amazing.
Oh, that's cool. Has he done anything of you?
He's done a lot of photography and he has sketched me and photographed me. And he's mostly into photography now, but his color pencil sketches, like anything. He could sit down with anything. And
that's cool.
But we'll go to a museum and I will love this painting on the wall. I just love this, you know. And he will tell me more about the technique involved in it.
Right.
And deeper things about it. And now I'll say, oh, that's why I love it. Okay, I see that. And I'll sort of, understand that a little bit better. So technique does get in the way of that. But there's one thing that it's a pet peeve of mine when somebody says, this person's really good. Mm. Oh, this person's really good. He just rips it up.
You're walking into the rat's nest of Home From Here. You know that, right?
Am I?
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
Keep going. I'm going to ask you the ultimate question. Go ahead.
Okay. So I feel like when someone is, just because someone is playing complicated, fast things, and I was there. I was in college where we tried to out-complicate and fast each other. That doesn't mean that it's good music or that it has value. Again, the value is in the artist's mind, you know, so and the listener's mind,
right,
or senses, right? So if I just think, you know, I love this chord. It's a sus2 chord. I love that chord. So that's great. I'm having a great time. It doesn't need to be complicated. Sometimes less is more.
So you've opened, okay, this is great. So first off, my whole rant about shredding on a guitar.
Shredding.
It, which is what you're talking, you know, fast.
I know.
It's more complicated.
I know, it's just the you know, anyway.
It's a violent word.
No, it's not that it's violent. It's just, you know, it's just when you've been a musician your whole career. And I was only a teacher for the last like 15 years of my life. I haven't been a teacher that long. I really was a musician.
Right.
I just had to get a, you know, benefits and all that stuff, right? But being with these people that are like, yeah, you know, the gig, gonna hit up for the gig, gonna shred in the shed, and the whole, you know,
it's annoying.
Yeah.
But my argument is that's an athletic achievement. I'm not 100% sure it's a musical achievement. Number one, when you shred or go super fast, you have such a wider margin for error. Because the note doesn't last long enough for me to figure out whether it fits or not. So it's kind of a cheat in a way,
right,
to get your hand to go fast. Now, there are amazing people who play the guitar really fast. I'm not saying that all shredders are blah, blah, blah. But I can also go on YouTube and see a 6-year-old shred.
Yes.
Right? I can't go on YouTube and see a 6-year-old cover James Taylor.
Right.
And the other reason why I completely agree with what you're saying about, like, you know, fast does not equal better is, I think when you're playing an instrument, you need to let the instrument do some of the work. You need to partner with it. Otherwise, it doesn't need to be there.
Right.
So, and how do you let an instrument do the work? I play guitar. You let it do what it's going to do to a note over time.
Right.
So, and especially acoustic guitar, like electric guitar doesn't diminish that much, but like if you play acoustic guitar and you hit a note and you're willing to sit there for a second and a half with it, it'll do things.
Right.
To me, that's more interesting to listen to, mm-hmm, than the 6-year-old shredding. The second thing that you said was you hate when people say that they're good. So I got into this internet thing. We did the Lifted project, and there's the guy who played bass on it. His name is Sean McKenna. He's amazing. So this one guy posts that the best bass player in the Hudson Valley is X, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I ask on the show who's the best guitar player, but I do it as a joke, like, you know, so we can get into a debate and it's funny. But I in real life don't think that there could be a best, because I don't know how you quantify that.
No.
So I wrote, hey, this, you know, I don't know about best, but my favorite bass player is Sean McKenna. And here's why, because he showed up to the project. He played the whole time. He carried stuff in. He carried stuff out. He was the first there. He was last leaving. He's a complete pro.
That's a lot of it.
That's a lot of it, right? Complete pro. And so I got into this whole thing about, can there be a best versus can there be a favorite? And then I got lit up, like, yeah, Burton hands out ribbons to everybody. You know, blah, 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 blah. I bet his kid has a soccer trophy from a game she didn't win, and blah, 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 blah. Can there be a best?
No, absolutely not.
There you have it.
Is there a best flavor of ice cream or whatever?
Right.
No, obviously not. And, you know, it's funny. I've noticed this now that I'm doing some gigging around here, and I'll tell you how I got into that. But that, you know, you're finding some people to play with, and sometimes it's the younger people who've not been in the business much that's like, oh, am I available? Well, I don't know. Like, who's playing? Who's the drummer? Like, I mean, I'm available, but I don't know, you know.
Right.
Who's this guy? What's this? What are you playing?
Mm-hmm.
But you call an older person who's played with, and this happened to me recently, who's played with, like, everybody under the sun. I mean, famous, famous people that we all know, household names, and been in the business for years, and that older person just be like, what time?
Yeah.
What do I wear?
You know what that is?
Don't you want to know, like, who? Nope.
Yeah. You know what that is, I think? A younger person wants to know if you're going to be able to carry them if they fuck up. Somebody that's been around not worried about it. I got
if, I think if also it's a little bit. I got the feeling it's a little bit about getting ahead or being with. I found
oh, like a career move.
Yeah, a career move. It's got everything's a strategic career move, and it's also well, you know, I only want to invest in projects that are going to be fruitful for me. But I find that the older people are like want more experience. Like, let me just open my eyes. Let me try something different.
Right.
Let me meet somebody different. Like,
right.
Let me just
that makes sense.
You
yeah,
know
that makes sense. Yeah,
and I think it's. It's good that they open their minds that way because, yeah.
Do you want to play something?
Yes.
Before I ask the next of my... Or do you want to talk about how you got into gigging
well,
first
tell
and
how
play
I got
something?
Into gigging.
Okay, because that's still hanging in the air.
Yeah, that's still hanging in the air. So
you talk, I'm going to touch the air. Are you hot in here? Is it hot in here?
It's a little warm.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I had moved up to Dutchess County.
How hard is it to talk to a person who's fixing the air conditioning while you're talking? This is great podcast technique in here, ladies and gentlemen.
So I had moved up to Dutchess County, and I've got my farm, and my husband is doing the dog boarding business, and we are having a great time. I'm just having the time of my life. We both became vegan, doing animal rescue, everything. But he's always bugging me about playing music. And I'm like, you know, I've been there, done that. I don't even know what genre I want to play anymore. I don't even know. I don't have the determination at this point in my life to be carrying around equipment, to be getting gigs, to be schmoozing with, I just, whatever.
It's a thing. Yeah.
It's just whatever. And then my husband basically.
And the money, like it's hard to get into the black.
Right.
Right. Right.
Well, yes. And I already had a job. I was teaching, you
right.
know, and I was making plenty of money teaching. I've got benefits. I don't need the money. So it's just, what am I doing artistically to fill myself? And I'm, you know, playing all the time. I have a piano at home. I'm always playing everything from Chopin to jazz to pop to Latin to whatever I can play. So
right.
I'm having a great time. But and then I was going to this really amazing therapist. I hadn't been to therapy for years. And was helping me deal with some PTSD from past abusive experiences. And he was so helpful to me, and I made so many leaps and bounds. And then he started talking to me about, also, why aren't you doing music? So one day I sat down with these markers that I had at my desk at work. I had some time at work, and I had this brand new set of markers that Bic came and delivered to us for some reason. I don't know. And I just made this big map of my life and everything, and I just ascertained it's really a beautiful thing, but anyway, it's like this colorful map of my life.
Do you still have it?
I do. Oh,
cool.
I'll always have it. I'm probably gonna laminate it and hang it up. And I ascertained from that I need to be doing music, like my music.
Right.
Because the 8-year-olds aren't doing it for me. It's great, but I need to be doing my music.
Right.
And my husband was like, I'll do everything. I'll learn about the equipment, I'll carry your equipment, I'll get you gigs. Next thing you know, I've got gig after gig after gig after gig.
That's great.
And I've been busy, and he has done everything. I mean, he's just amazing. That's how badly he wants me to be happy.
That's very, very,
you know,
very
I'm
nice.
Sitting there at work, and he's texting me, got another gig. And, you know, and he's not my manager from, you know, I do what I want to do, and I tell him.
Does he have any free time?
he's really good at getting gigs. So you never know.
He's actually in the other room. Can I get him in here?
Once you know him, you likely get a call sometime and say, hey, I got you a gig, because he's just really good at it.
That's amazing.
And he learned sound systems so well that when I got the opportunity to play at the jazz series at the Millbrook Winery, we needed this outdoor sound system. He bought everything, and he spent like weeks researching sound and on this mixer and learning how to make everything sound good. And he got the sound so good.
Right.
I can't tell. I was so impressed. That was another reason I didn't want a gig, because I hate bad sound.
Mm.
I'm not thrilled with playing a keyboard to begin with. I'd rather play a piano. But if I'm going to do it, the sound has to be good.
Right.
And I play too many times on bad sounds. Your music is only as good as your sound.
Right.
So that's something I have a pet peeve about. So he does all that, and that's how I ended up gigging. And then how I ended up singing, that's a whole other story, is we go to this place. It's called Nooch's in Millbrook. It's a pub, and they have a really good vegan black bean burger. There's nothing else vegan there, but that is really good.
Okay.
I've eaten it many times, I'll tell you that. And they have karaoke, and we started doing karaoke. And I just suddenly decided, hey, you know, I should just like work at this singing thing a little bit. My daughter's a professional singer, songwriter. She lives out in LA. And she gave me some tips. And I'd had voice lessons in college a long time ago. I just never really worked at it. And suddenly I just started singing. And so now that became a really good part of my gig.
Right.
Because now I can be the whole show.
Right. What did your therapist teach you? What was the biggest takeaway from therapy?
I don't really think he taught me anything except somehow getting me to be so relaxed that I was able to talk about what I needed to talk about. He was able to walk me through.
So it's just the process of being able to talk about it and not the feedback that you got.
Well, and there's feedback too, but there's if a really good therapist, I think, I don't know, but has a way of getting you to say what you need to say without leading the witness.
Right. Right.
Right.
So I've been in therapy in and out. I've never met somebody that could.
Oh, my therapist is the best.
Really?
And I can give you his number.
No, I'm good now, but okay. There was a time where I was, do you know my story? Like I was batshit crazy.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
So there was I've heard.
I listened to it.
Not for me. Oh, okay.
Not on the street.
Okay, thank you.
I listened to a few of your podcasts.
I was batshit crazy. And like, I never bumped into a therapist that worked. But so I love when it happens because I believe in the process. I just never dawned on me. What's the biggest tip your daughter gave you?
She just gave me technical tips and
what's
stuff.
What's the best one?
She's,
or what's one?
I think
that's most useful
mostly
for you.
About relaxation.
That's the
of
fucking
the voice.
Key.
Yeah.
I almost destroyed my voice. So for years I did this thing called An Evening with James Taylor. Right. And I picked up guitar because of James Taylor.
I love James Taylor.
Have worshipped James Taylor from day one. Mm-hmm. Blah 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 blah. He's my so underrated as a guitar player. It's ridiculous. Cause he plays the guitar in this bizarre way. You wouldn't know it unless you're a guitar player, but he plays the guitar player like you plays the guitar like you play the piano. Most times when you arpeggio a guitar with your right, your finger picking a guitar, mm-hmm. most times there's a pattern. Then the patterns have names and you pick one and it's a pattern. He plays it like a piano. There's no pattern. It's all.
That's how I play a guitar.
Okay, great.
Because I'm a pianist. And
okay,
I don't know how to
then there you have it.
Right,
so when you cover James Taylor, if you're going to, which is why so few people do it, when you cover James Taylor, if you're trying to stay true to the song, you can't just learn like the chords and a pattern. You got to go note for note.
Right.
And it's so I went down a rabbit hole for years doing that. And it's, but I got to the point where I could do it. So
he
then
also
I'm
like, has voicings, like the voicings that are very particular. So, you know, you have a chord and you have just like a bunch of notes, or you can pick, you know, certain notes
that
are going to feature in that.
Totally.
In that chord. And you can tell that he does that.
Yeah, he completely does that. So he's hard on both hands. So then I'm like, oh, I can do this. So I should go out. And so I did this thing Evening with James Taylor. So for years. But if you're going to cover James Taylor and you're trying to be like authentic, because there's like rock bands that cover James Taylor, but if you're going to be authentic, like you have to have like a specific voice quality too, right?
Right.
I can do that, but it's not my voice. So for decades, I was singing like that.
Right.
In my mind, I'm gone. That's not my voice. But I was doing it to sound like James Taylor. So somewhere along the line, I forgot what I sounded like. And then so I have a friend. She's a very dear friend, Heysha, who's also a great vocal coach. And I'm like, so one day I'm like, what's the best tip you can give somebody singing? And she said, sing like you talk.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wow. So then I went home and started singing like I talk. And it doesn't even – it's completely different voice.
Right.
Isn't
right.
that crazy?
Yeah.
But I like it so much more. Mm-hmm. And –
well, for me, a lot was finding my range because my range is not my range is very low. I always had a low singing voice and speaking voice my whole life.
Right.
And it's actually closer to a tenor than it is to an alto.
Oh, okay.
So we're not even talking contralto. And I
right.
sing better very low. And when I take it, I still have a big range, but it's low range. And so when I move everything down, you know, it works, and I transpose things into the correct key for me.
I love the female voice. down low. I love that.
Me too. Yeah. I never was a big soprano person in terms of listening either.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. I'm with. Okay. Will you play something?
Okay.
What are you going to play?
Okay. So I made two little songs. So they're really short little songs just to be on the show.
Well, because you're smart and you wanted to be on Amazon or Spotify and Amazon. Right. But you do play covers. In real life,
I play covers and jazz tunes, which are technically covers. Yeah,
right.
So, but I
just don't want people to, because I want people to hire you, so I don't want them to think that you're only
right.
doing
no,
originals.
No. I do all kinds of things, but I just wrote these two kind of contrasting little songs just for this occasion,
just to show off. Oh, two originals
just for the fun.
Beautiful. Yeah. So this is a world debut.
Yes.
Okay.
This is a world debut. And since I just wrote this a week ago, and this is like only the third day I'm doing it, I probably will mess up, but I'll try my best.
It's the curse of the show. You will forget the words or you'll screw up the... it'll happen.
We'll see.
We can start over.
Okay, good.
You think I haven't met you, but I have known a few. Walk and talk and act like you, and tell me what to do. Shower me with love and charm, and treat me like a toy. You think I'm just a little girl, but you're a little boy. Little boy, why can't you be cool? Don't you know there's trouble when you play a double-sided fool? Little boy.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Not so anybody would know.
No.
You didn't stop. So
but
that was,
you always know.
Right.
But you also always know that you will always mess up in some little way at least.
And that's
what I tell my students.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
My joke is I play a lot of originals because you won't know if I screw them up or not.
That's true.
When you do covers, everybody's tuned in. Right. But originals, are like, no, I meant to do that. What's your writing process?
Since I started last week, I mean, I've written, classical music and piano and classical oriented for chamber music groups. I've written jazz for jazz bands and, I've done all this
right.
stuff. So that's kind of different than writing a song. I don't usually write songs. So
you're very good at it.
I mean, I wrote songs when I was like 12,
Right.
He doesn't look at me on the playground, but...
Hold on, I'm going to write. That's actually pretty good.
That's a good hook.
Yeah, nice.
I
have it recorded anyway.
I haven't really done this. So that came out of just what I've been thinking about. And I've had, men in my life who've acted like boys.
Okay, so you clearly have a relationship history. Tell me that. What's going on there?
Did it
start with the first husband or was it before the first husband?
My first husband, I only have one first husband.
Right.
So there's only two to begin to total.
Right.
My first husband, he was not well and he ended up dying when he was 47.
Not well physically or?
Not well physically. He had addiction issues. Not really his fault at all, I think, because he had... generalized anxiety disorder, which was really untreated. And I think that's what led to that. But but we divorced, but we were very good friends. We were very close. And then he died when my kids were in high school.
Mm.
So, and then, I don't like to really get into the rest of it. but
you know what show you're on, right? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know what show I'm on. But you know, there's always things that you can talk about and things you can't talk about.
See, that's a problem I have. I honestly don't think that. Like, it's obviously individual.
Right.
But I maybe it's a problem I have. No,
I'm generally that way about everything else in my life. Right. There's no, I think what really changed that for me was actually speaking of my husband dying. I had this life altering experience that when I tell people this experience, they look at me really blankly because they don't understand why it was so life altering. But
let's see how I look at you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I had to go identify my husband's body in the morgue.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So I go to the New York City morgue. I'm a mess. You have to imagine. I'm a mess. This happened suddenly.
No, that's life-changing in and of itself.
No one's expecting this. I have to go tell my daughter that day what happened. My son is like, it was just an awful time. God. And I'm feeling very alone in my life. I have absolutely no one. Because I had gotten myself into a situation where I had pushed people away and I was really very alone. So a very lonely spot in my life. So I go into this morgue and, you know, I've only seen it on like Law and Order or whatever. I'm expecting people to be cold and wearing suits and whatever.
Right. And it's you pull out a file cabinet drawer.
Large young woman comes into the room and she's just shining. And she has this beautiful face. She's the dark skinned and her hair, you know how when you're dark skinned, your skin can just glow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's young. So her skin's just glowing and she's beaming this smile at me. And she took me in, she sat me at this table, and she said, "Oh, tell me." I'm like, tell you what? Tell me. And I just start telling her my story. And I'm sobbing hysterically. And the next thing you know, I'm practically sitting in this woman's lap.
Oh, wow.
And she has her arms around me. Sure. And she's comforting me. And she said nothing to me. She just listened.
Mm.
And from that moment, I just knew that everything was going to be okay. And I also knew that there was so much in the world that completely does not matter.
That is so
cool.
That was
very life-changing because from that moment, I got out of a lot of bad situations in my life. I knew that I had the strength to go on and make my life what it needed to be.
Right.
I knew I had the strength to take care of my kids and get them through this crisis. And all that kind of led to me to my life right now.
Every single time I'm working, my daughter calls me. She knows I'm working. Hold on. I'm going to punish her. Bro, you're on the show. You called during the middle of one, so I put you on.
Oh, so I thought this started at 11.
No, they started at 10. What can I do for you, bro?
No, I was just saying hi.
Oh, hi, sweetheart. Can I call you when I'm done?
Yeah.
Everything's good?
Yeah.
All right. Love you, bro.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Sorry.
That's adorable.
She's
really just calling to say hi?
Yeah.
She doesn't want something?
No.
Oh, that's wonderful.
No, she's an amazing.
How old is she?
She saved my life. She's 16 and a half. And
wow. If you have that kind of relationship with a teenage daughter, that's amazing.
Wow.
I mean, my teenage daughter was wonderful too, but they're not all, you know.
Have you heard our story?
Yes.
Okay. She's just freaking incredible. She came out of the womb 40 years old. The shit that she has seen, like between her mom's cancer and me going crazy and legal crap, like the stuff that she has seen, she had every reason in the world to act out, like every single excuse to act out possible. And she won't do it. She just checks in to say hi. She never wants anything except maybe a ride once in a while.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's ridiculous.
That's great. But anyway,
so you got heard.
Right.
This woman listened to you.
Yeah.
That's so rare.
Right.
Isn't it?
I did not expect that from the New York City morgue.
Or anybody. Right?
Or anybody. But I often tell people that story and they don't at all react the way you react. It's just sort of, I think this woman had a gift. It makes me feel all rosy about New York City. Maybe somebody knew she had that gift and that's why she was in. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I just expected, you know, the person to be like almost nasty to me.
Right. And just write whatever on the toe tag you're out.
Yeah. You go to the post office or whatever. You go to the, you know, getting your driver's license renewed. That's kind of how I expected it to be.
Right.
And that just really changed.
No, the the gift of just listening and shutting your own face is that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sort of gave me a lot of the confidence.
Sure.
To go through no, that makes a complete lot of sense. Life. It certainly made everything seem smaller. Plus, I mean, my husband's passing was also made me feel that way too, though. I mean, it really changes you to have. It doesn't matter if you're married or not. If you're not married anymore, because we were not married anymore.
Right.
But to now be the only parent of these kids, no one is going to love these kids the way you do.
Right.
I don't care how many times you get married, whatever. It's not the same. No, when it's not someone that was there that raised them from a baby that, you know, it's
right.
It's a lonely experience.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's. That shaped me a lot.
I imagine that happens so few times in life that somebody that you can talk to somebody about the most important thing that's going on and they don't judge and they don't try to impose their agenda and they don't try to fix.
Right.
That's a real gift.
And I was about to throw in the towel on relationships altogether when I met my husband.
Right.
But, he was so different. And here's what I think is the secret to a great relationship.
Go.
Is when that relationship is so important to the people in it. Both
yes.
people.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Yeah.
I really think that really is it. Unless someone has addiction or a mental illness, severe mental illness, or something's going on like that. If two people really both want that relationship to work, they're just automatically going to be making little sacrifices along the way.
Right.
Like, okay, I'm really, really upset that for the 20th time, this person left the bathroom towel on the floor.
Right.
Okay. But my relationship's so important to me.
Right.
Then I'm not going to get all pissy about it and
right.
get into some fight over it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That is the, that's the part.
Yeah. So and it's funny because you can get there in a bunch of different ways, but from your story and my story, trauma helps you get there.
Oh, yes.
Because especially if you like, thank God, and I hope you never do, you have to go through trauma together, but going through trauma together, that filters out the bullshit real fast.
I mean, we went through, my father lived with us and he was, you know,
okay,
his
so
death
then,
and
right.
you know, that was all to plenty of trauma on the way. We've lost
right.
pets in terrible situations that we've, you know, really loved and
right.
we've gone through that. So, you know, there's plenty of,
could
plenty
you,
of trauma out there.
Could you marry somebody who doesn't like your music?
I used to think the answer was yes. But now I think the answer would have to be no. But it's not my music. It's just music. I make different types of music. So,
but anything you make is your music.
Yes, that's true. But
could you marry somebody who, while you were playing a song, vacuumed underneath your feet?
If I didn't have to vacuum, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm on the wrong end of this then.
No, but I don't need to be... like worshipped as a musician.
No, there's a difference between worshipped and
not worshipped. I don't need to,
but respecting
really...
what you do.
Yes,
is...
I think respecting what I do is important. Respecting it and liking it. Yes, yeah, that is important. But I never.
My
actually...
wife literally vacuumed underneath me while I was playing.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's different if she vacuumed under you. Where if you were like, I want to play this beautiful song that I wrote.
Right.
And then she started vacuuming. That wouldn't be okay.
Right.
But it was like, I'm practicing this thing. I mean, I play a lot now that I'm doing these gigs. I have to get my music together. I'm playing a lot.
Right.
I wouldn't expect my husband not to vacuum under my feet if he were to vacuum.
But if he were.
I'm the vacuumer in the family.
I'm not the vacuumer
roles,
in the family.
You know, sort of, so that, you know.
So what's your process? Different people approach writing differently. Some people think it's given to them. Some people think I made it. Some people think, what's your process?
Well, it's funny because this one was more contrived than one I just did. I did this other one, and this other one, I have another one. Can I do that one?
Of course.
So I have another one. That one I really wrote literally in a matter of hours. And it was something I was thinking about. And I was talking about this major 9 chord that
yep.
I love. And I was just playing that. And then I just started to just sing this song.
What do you think that is?
That's... spontaneous. So,
but from where?
I have no idea. I think sometimes songs come to us, music comes to us, musical ideas come to us, and it's almost like they're from a past life or another place or another.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, as if it was already there and you discovered it. That's what it's like. As if you came upon it and you saw it on the ground and you picked it up and you said, oh, look at this song.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why it feels that way, but a lot of musicians feel that way about
it. I completely feel that way about it. When I write, I like, so Lifted, by the way, you're choir director, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly call it a choir. It's you know, fourth and fifth graders singing.
Together?
They're reasonably together.
All right. So
it's a mandatory chorus. Everyone must be in chorus.
That's fantastic.
It is and it isn't. There's a lot of kids that don't want to sing.
Right.
I make it fun. I make them
important,
love chorus.
It's important to do things you don't want to do with other people. It teaches you so much. So
yes, you're. That's true.
It teaches you so much. Forget the music. Yes. You know, at that age, choir's probably not about the music as much.
We make it fun. We make it fun.
Right. I think that's great, man. I love that. So I'm doing the Lifted project, right? Mm-hmm. And I write a song for it. So I invite everybody to do it. They're like, oh, well, man. I write a song for it, play it for Trish. She's like, that's not a good song. I'm like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, hey, yeah, but that's her.
Okay, she's being honest.
Yeah,
okay.
That's one way. Honest is a word. Yes. Tactless is another word. No, kidding. Kind of. But so she's like, but no, thank God she did say that. So I'm like, oh, crap. And I'm like, and I don't write choir music at all. So I'm like, you know, that in and of itself was like a big enough deal that I'm doing choir music and I don't know choir music at all. I don't even do harmony, really. And I'm like,
Did you have a baton?
I did not have a baton. And I thought about it. Well, no, because I conducted the choir. Okay. And I thought about it. And then I'm like, no, you will look like an asshole if you have a baton. Don't do it. But so I'm sitting there and I'm like sweating. And I'm like, John, these people need a song. And it has to be good. And it has to be like, it has to be good. And what I wrote was like, I thought it was okay, but it wasn't. And like in half an hour, the song came out of me. And I'm like, it's way better than what I can write.
You know what to think when you're nervous, right?
What?
Instead of, I have to do this, you have to think, I get to do this.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And when I have a student that's going to go perform on piano or something big solo thing and they're really scared, I always use that technique that I heard from some radio psychologist, Dr. Joy Brown. I used to listen to Dr. Joy Brown.
Okay.
She said this. So, and then I would tell that student, you know, you're going out and playing your piece for everyone because you want to share it, because this is something you want to do. But if you don't want to do this, you didn't have to come today.
Right.
And you could just leave.
Right.
And of course, the kid's like, no, I want to share it. Well, you got to go out there
and appreciate
because
the space.
You want to share
it. That's great. Yeah. That's great. But yeah, like that song's better than anything I can write. So I'm like, okay, with you. That song was given to me. Right. And then I go back. So then that fascinated me. So I go back and I look at other stuff I've written and I'm like, okay, try to write that again. And I sit down and I'm like, I can't. Like I can write, anybody can write a song in 10 minutes, but to write a good song in 10 minutes, hard. And I'm like, oh, wait, I couldn't write that either. And I'm like, oh, wait, I couldn't write that either. And now I'm like to the point where I haven't kind of anything, like I haven't really written anything. Like it's all
right.
Just right.
Right.
But I love that. So I think the trick is to get yourself into a space where you're ready to receive rather than ready to.
Yes.
Right.
It can't be too artificial.
Right. Right.
Really. And yeah, I've actually had woken up and had songs in my dreams.
Yeah.
And I'll just sing my favorite one to you. It's just one line. So in the dream, I'm watching this cowboy. I don't really listen to country music, but he's a country singer. And he's on a stage. He's got this big old black guitar, and he's strumming it, and he's singing. And he's
is he hot?
Yeah, he is.
There you go.
He's
okay.
A hot cowboy, big strapping dude.
There we go.
You know, we have a lot of, you know, like kind of cowboy types in Millbrook, you know. So
right.
It's sort of like. Well, they don't walk around dressed like cowboys, but you know the type.
Yep.
So he's on the stage and he's singing, I don't care about your TikTok stars and your souped up cars. Everyone needs to get to know my dog.
Ooh, that's a great line.
I know. And I'm like, how can I turn this into something that's more my genre?
You can't. You got to write a country song. That's the best line in the world.
But that was in a dream. And then I had another one where I was, it was a video, music video, and these people are strolling around along the beach. And the line was, as we walk along the shore, you and I, in the land of broken teapots by the sea. And it made so much sense to me. And I was like, that is such a great line. And I thought, what if broken teapots by the sea? What does that mean?
Shells.
Yeah, but for some reason it's teapot.
Right, so no, but teapots is better because teapot holds something. Shell holds something.
I saw that one as kind of a bossa nova, so I think I probably will work on that one.
Ah.
Unless someone now listens to this and steals my idea.
I think you're all right.
It wasn't that good.
No. I have an honorable audience. I hope. How many times a day? Who's the actress you look like? Julie? How many times do you get this?
This is a little controversial. I usually look like whatever red-haired person you can think of that you've ever seen.
No, this is specific. She was in.
I know who you mean. I can't think of her name.
Right, we're both blanking. Do you get that a lot?
Yes, okay. I get that. All right. I get that.
Julianne Moore. There it is.
I once did this face transposition thing, and it did kind of turn out similar.
Yeah.
So they are kind of right. But if anybody's known a redhead person in their life, they'll always say, I look exactly like them. Yeah.
How does that feel? That must be fun.
There's a whole lot. I could go into a whole other 1% thing.
Go.
We are the 1%.
The redheads?
Red hair. Yeah, the redheads. And
why?
Red hair with the blue eyes are 1%. If it was brown eyes, it would be 1.5%. People just make certain assumptions about redheads.
That you're crazy?
And also men,
that you're crazy and you're good in bed would be the two.
Or I think also just that don't take me seriously.
Really?
Yes. Because red hair is more of not like a serious hair color or something. I think. I don't know if that's all it, but I also know that men have gone out of their way my whole life to tell me that they don't like redheads. Like, I have heard this before. Oh, I'm not really into redheads. Okay, you don't need to tell me that. I'm not even trying to pick you up.
Right.
Why do I need to know that you're not into redheads? We don't need to.
Right.
It's just a strange thing. Or women often would say, you'd be so pretty if you didn't have red hair. I've actually heard that line. So
wow.
When I was younger, people would say that. Yeah, so.
What would I say to a guy who said I don't really like redheads? I think I would say I don't really like people who don't know what the fuck to say.
That's it. Ooh, you're good at comebacks.
That would piss me right off.
I had this piece being performed at Royal Albert Hall in London, and I went to London to see it.
Something
performed.
You play it?
It was
you wrote?
It was a chamber work that I wrote for a chamber orchestra.
Okay.
And I went to see it played, and I was only in London for 48 hours because my daughter was 2 and I wanted to get back to her. So
right.
I was very
But you got to go to.
But
I mean,
all I did was walk up and down the street and look at the red haired people. And I would just stare at them.
I have found my home.
Like, we call them for hair. And they would just look through
That's
me.
That's so
like,
funny.
Not even noticing. But
right. Because they too, yeah.
Yeah. But normally when you're out in public and you have red hair, you see someone else with red hair and you look at you like, oh.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So my husband loves that I have red hair. So it's nice to be with someone that loves that I have red hair. So that's good, you know.
Can you play a little bit of the chamber piece?
Oh, no. I wouldn't even remember. That was so many years
ago. Oh, okay. What's the trick for writing for more than one instrument and more than one voice?
A lot of schooling. And a lot
Okay,
of
lifted
schooling.
Project, we're fucked.
I mean, you need to know how. Yeah, you just need to learn all the ranges of all the instruments, and you need to have great keyboard skills, and it's just, you know, a lot of schooling. I'm sort of one of the most overly schooled people, and most of what I've learned is probably completely useless. But the full kind of general gloss of it all is helpful.
So, by the way, would you like to do the next one, next lifted project?
Absolutely. Sure.
April 6th.
Okay. April 6th.
So this next
That's
one's
a long time away.
This next one's going to be complicated. I'm writing a song with the Westchester Children's Chorus. I wrote like half of it, and then they're going to write the other half, and they're going to perform it.
Oh.
Then, this is where I completely screwed myself. Then we're doing an acoustic guitar symphony, so I'm going to have like 30. Acoustic guitars all playing the same. No,
that's cool.
No, it's musical piece. So I'm like, all right. But I think
if you need help with writing any instrument parts.
Well, here was my strategy. Thank you. I would love. I love you for that.
Or a flute. You want me to write some lines? So I'd be happy to do it.
Thank you so much. Mm. My thought was, like, I'm just gonna video it and then send it to them and say, "You play what you want. Like, this is the song, but play it the way you want to, and just see what happens." And then we're doing, just so you know what you're getting into. And then the core group, which you'll be a part of, is doing a song I'm working on now. And then we're doing "Won't Be Broken," which is the song we did the last time. Mm-hmm. But with a 200-person choir backing us up.
Wow.
So, it'll be pretty cool. But that's why I asked, like, how do you write for...
I hope you have a big space.
We're working on a very big... not a very big space, but we're working on...
Okay.
I can't say yes yet, but we have a tentative yes for, like, a really cool space that already has sound and video and lighting and all that stuff. Okay. What's your favorite part about playing out?
It's just great to, it's a great, I feel like you're interacting with people.
How often do you play a day? Or how much do you play a day? Or do you play every day? Or what's
every
your
day? It depends on whether, with school's in session. And, but you know, I'm playing.
But you're playing in school.
All day at school. So I get to fit my own stuff in where I want. And,
right.
I mean, I don't practice a tremendous amount now because, you know, I've practiced so much my whole life. It's just about whatever project is coming up.
Right.
I'm working on that.
Right.
You know, and I'm, you know.
Right. It's hard to get motivated to practice.
Well, you have to have something to practice. So
right.
I practice a lot I made some original arrangements of jazz tunes that I got ready for the winery gig. So I practiced a lot for that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so I really, you know, I had a fabulous bass player with me. I wanted to make sure that I was, you know.
What do you have coming up?
Tuesday I'm playing at Julian's in Millbrook.
Okay.
They have
great, now you're forcing me to post the show tomorrow.
There.
Great, thank you.
And
no, I'm just kidding. I can make it. I can make it work. We'll get it in.
Okay.
So Tuesday's Julian's. What's next?
I have a lot of things like in the works.
Oh, okay.
That will. I'm not sure when that will be, but you know, my husband he keeps them coming.
Just pumps them out.
I generally tend to gig about once a week. You know,
really, that's
or
great.
Sometimes once every other week. I don't know, somewhere in there.
And, it's what I have found. Is there's only two ways to gig. One is like what you're doing, do it a lot,
right?
So that you you know, because it's a skill set unto itself. There's like reading the audience and do you have set lists or do you not use set lists?
I am all about set lists.
You are.
I'm a music teacher, so I have a classical background, so it's about organizing a program, a flow, a directness, you know.
Mm.
So here are the songs I want to do. I don't want to do too many, you know, slow songs in a row. I need to scatter those throughout. I want to change up the styles. I don't want to do too many of a certain feel in a row. I want to say, you know, I want to know I might not have time for all of my songs, so I want to make sure to put those at the top of the list that I want to get done. And I like to, especially when you're playing with other people, a set list to me is totally necessary because you don't want all that dead time where people are like, what are we playing? What?
Right.
Key? Huh? What? Oh, what? Let me find it. You know, I mean, no one wants that.
Right.
And I feel like if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well.
Right.
And I feel like some people like to show up to gigs like not very prepared and not whatever.
Right.
Then I sort of and it's sort of like, hey, man, it's OK. Whatever happens when it's all cool, we're just here to. But I my analogy that I was telling my husband the other day is if you're going to go to a car show. Right.
Right.
And you're not that into it. It's just fun. You go for the barbecue or whatever, you know, but you don't wash your car. Like, wouldn't you at least wash your car to show up for the car show? I mean, if you're going to show up
right.
your car. Wash it.
Right.
And I feel like that you're going to show up to the gig, you know, be prepared.
Right.
Enough that it's fun.
Right.
Because it's never fun if you're that unprepared. So I do like to be prepared.
What do you, okay.
And I'm a geek.
No, a good geek though. See, I come at it completely different. I come at it completely different. My vibe is like to your point about letting the audience is an artist and they create, right? So my take, which I don't advise anybody to do, but my take is I go in, I know what song I'm playing first, and I know what songs I'm good at and what songs I'm not. And then based on whatever I'm feeling from the audience, if I have a set list, I feel like, okay, now I'm going to force you to connect the dots, and I'm not letting the audience be the artist of the experience because they're not, they're participating, but they're not. Whereas if I know, you know, I listen, if you come, you're going to get six James Taylor, you're going to get six John Burton, you're going to get two Bruce Springsteen, and you're going to get a Taylor Swift just because, and then whatever. But so I know what I'm doing, but, or I know the songs roughly that I'm going to do, but I like to let the audience kind of.
Well, yeah, there is some of that. Like,
right?
I'll skip a song or.
Oh, so, okay. Like, so then you do
I'm
the same
flexible,
thing.
But I also like
you do the
to
same
just
thing, then, yeah.
vary the songs because as a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Like as a teacher, when you're doing like you're teaching a lesson about something, like let's say I was going to do a class about the Beatles.
Right.
I would have different activities in the class for different types of kids.
Right.
Some kids like to dance, so we dance to a Beatles song. Some kids are really interested in lyrics and words, so we like look at the words. Like we would do different activities for different people.
Right.
So I like to.
So
do,
you do the same thing.
I like to kind of vary the songs and change up the set list
right.
so that each one just pulls in different
right.
people.
No, that makes
you,
sense.
You have mixed ages and stuff, and you also know places. You know who goes there.
Right.
You
right.
know who's young or old. You know.
Right.
You know where. You know. I mean, there's some places I don't play. Because I know that I'm going to have to do Brown Eyed Girl, Have You Ever Seen the Rain, and Sweet Caroline, and like the 10 standards.
Have you
songs
seen the No that... Brown Eyed Girl t-shirts?
No.
Oh, God. Lots of people around here that are gigging just wear that t-shirt that says No Brown Eyed Girl because
right.
they just won't do it anymore.
Right. And the funny thing is, like, if I'm in a place and I hear Brown Eyed Girl, I'm tapping my foot and singing along.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no, it's a great song. All right. You're a pro, so I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. You know who Johnny Resnick is? That's not the question.
Oh, I know.
Lead, he's singer, lead, you know the Goo Goo Dolls?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So
Iris is my favorite song. I love a song. And it's all about the guitar stuff in it.
Okay, this is my question, and you're the right person to ask about this. So do you know his guitar story?
No.
Can't play guitar. So can't make the normal chord shapes. So what he does is, and what he does is, every song has its own guitar and its own tuning. And so he doesn't have to play, like if you tune, like, well, you'll get this. You don't have to make chords if a guitar is tuned a certain way. You can just like push one string down and get a chord and then push two strings down and right. get a different chord and blah, blah, blah. And for a song, that works.
Right, right.
So my question to you, is that cheating or is that genius?
No, that's genius.
That's what I think. I think if you, right?
One of the most liberating things I ever heard, and it was about technique, was I was in doing classical and I was at SUNY Binghamton. I had this amazing classical piano teacher named Walter Ponce, very famous tours all over, whatever. Anyway, he said to me one day, however you can make these notes happen on the piano, it doesn't matter with your nose, with your toes.
Mm.
Just figure out a way to make them happen. And sort of
freeing that's kinda
me
cool.
up from all the technical rules so that if I needed to do, because I have very small hands actually, if I needed to do something by, you know, using two hands for something that would be done with one hand or whatever I needed to do. And that just made me creative in a technical
way. Oh, yeah.
Because to do good technique, you really need creativity too.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we're all built differently and we have, you know, it's... yeah, it's a great, I think that's genius. I love it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm going to go look this up now.
Go look it up. And you'll see, like if you watch like a Goo Goo Dolls concert, every song is a new guitar. And
right.
and he gets interviewed about it and he says, I can't, like those shapes just weren't working for me. So I just figured out a way. And that's why his guitar sounds so different too. It's so much fuller because it's.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of times you'll see him playing a song and he won't use his left hand at all for like.
Right.
Four measures because he's already playing the chord he wants to play.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Kind of cool,
solved
right?
the mystery for me there.
There you go. What's your next song?
Okay. So this is a song. I was something else I was just thinking about. It's really a song about being happy. I know it sounds a little corny. It's not.
That's the mission of life. That's not corny.
I sent a recording of this after I wrote it to my daughter. And I said, without me saying anything, what genre is this? And she's like, I don't really know. It's kind of like modern Burt Bacharach.
Sweet.
I don't know. Anyway, okay, here it goes.
It is modern Burt Bacharach.
Yeah, there's my chord I was just talking about.
Yeah, I heard it, yeah.
Every day, another day, sad faces on the train, tired eyes look out at the rain. Did they miss the happiness?
that someone left inside. Turning to the passengers, I smile. I have a friend named Rose. She laughs and she sparkles. She smiles and glows. She lights up a room wherever she goes.
That's bombing.
Oh, thanks.
That's awesome.
And I actually do have a friend named Rose.
Really?
She's a very happy person, and she's very energetic.
Right.
And she's going through a difficult time actually right now.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Rose.
But she's so happy even. Like, she just knows how to do it.
Right.
I'm like watching her do it.
Right.
And I'm like impressed.
That's awesome.
With the way she does it.
Yeah.
With the way she is just so enthusiastic and
that's awesome.
Energetic and, you know, putting her best foot forward.
I kind of saw, I don't know why, but I kind of saw like a Woody Allen movie while you were playing that. And I don't know why, but I kind of.
Well, it's so funny because I love Woody Allen movies.
Okay.
So I don't know, where did that come from? Where did this song come? Now, and that's what something that I call, you know, the genre trap. I
like think Central Park, Fall, Walking Down. I have a friend named Rose. Right, like I kind of, right?
But I think a lot of us have issues with genre traps.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Woody Allen.
Yes, a lot of people hate Woody Allen. Fortunately, no one that I know. But genre traps are, you know, keep us. They're very difficult because you start making a song and you're like, oh wait, this isn't my genre.
Right.
And now I hate, that's another thing I hate, is all the rules that genres have. There's rules, basically. I mean, yeah, you want to say there's no rules, but if you do a song, it's not that you can't do the song, but wait, that's not technically this style or whatever. And
right.
Now everything's become so eclectic. There really isn't.
Right.
You know, there really isn't a certain.
The problem is, if you don't pick a genre, you can't tag your song. And if you can't tag your song, you can't market your song. And if you can't market your song.
And you can't monetize.
Right.
And the thing about monetizing, though, and money and music, that's a whole other thing. You could have a whole show on that. But
I've had a gazillion.
But I mean, that's always been an artist's choice. Like when I was at Berklee College of Music, they said to us, you know, we had this music business class. And they said, we don't want to see you doing anything but music. Go out there and do music. You should be doing music. You shouldn't compromise. Don't sell yourself out. Don't do something other than music. But if you're playing in a wedding band for 20 years that you're bored to death of, or you're, you know, doing something musically that's just really not fulfilling, is it really necessary to do music to make your living? And I think I've known a lot of musicians that have been happy with other careers that are doing their music on the side.
Almost happier because you have money. I'm not worried about my bills.
Right.
I'm not worried. I can afford strings. I can.
And that's what I finally did. I finally got the public school music teaching job. And that's not music. It's more emotional, psychological support of children, helping children grow. I love people. I love
children. I think that might be like the most important music.
Yeah, well, music is, you are doing music, but it's not like my music. That's not my music.
No, you know, you're.
That's not like a musically a challenging thing to me. It's more psychologically, emotionally a challenging
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it certainly does help your performance skills because you've got 100 kids on the stage and you're just praying that you're not, you know, I mean, one wrong note, someone might mess up their solo. I mean, it could be very demanding, you know, but I think that for me, that was a compromise. And once I had that gig and I had that steady income and benefits and I don't have to worry about finding work all the time.
Right.
That now it's very relaxing to do music.
Right.
Because it used to just be, I've got to fill up my calendar. I've got to get enough gigs. I've got to make the money. And
and the trick to performing is to be relaxed. So if you can, right? So if yeah. Right. What makes me insane about playing out, and the other way to play out, I think, is the way I do it, which is only do it once in a while. But I can do that because like my shows are mostly, like my shows are half talk. Like the space, right. The space in between the songs is as important as the songs.
Great though, that's great.
Well, it yeah. I have a whole theory about people that don't concentrate on the space between songs that when they perform. It makes me nuts. Wait, what was I gonna say? Space between songs, performing. I lost it.
Performing. Oh, the way you gig is you don't gig that often.
Well,
gig.
We'll talk money. Right. Okay. But when I do, this is what makes me crazy. Thank you for helping me get there. You play out someplace.
Yeah.
You have people who are at their leisure time, which is probably amongst the most valuable time of their week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Hold on. I got to let somebody in. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Hold that thought. Hold on. I'm coming back. I'll cut that. Sorry about that.
Okay, that's
all right. That's my next guest. I saw her in the window. All right, so I'll cut that middle crap out. So you have people at their leisure time, right?
Right.
And that's amongst the most valuable time that a person has.
Yes.
Because they're not at their job. Yeah. They're not at blah, blah. You have a venue that's making a profit. Or it wouldn't be there. So you have a business that's profiting from people spending leisure time.
Mm-hmm.
And you are contributing to that at the highest level.
Yes.
And you are the lowest paid person there.
Yes, you are.
That makes me nuts.
The people bussing tables are making more than you are. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they might even have a shorter shift and they're still making more than you are.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. And I don't.
Well, you're not doing it for, I mean, I could only.
But you
do this.
Should be.
I used to be asked to teach private piano lessons for a reduced rate. And if I meet a kid that I think really deserves a piano lesson, can't afford it. Can't
That's
afford
different.
The full rate? No, I don't do it for a reduced rate. I do it for free.
Right.
I don't, and I've told my husband that before. If you really want to do this photography project and they want to pay you less because that's all they have in the budget, but you really have a passion for this project, do it for free.
Right.
It's better to work for free sometimes than to work for crap pay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're part of, and there's all these establishments that you have to bring people. You got to guarantee you can bring people. Well, first of all, no one can guarantee that they can bring people unless they're selling tickets. You can't guarantee people are going to come.
Right.
And we've filled up places, but we've had other times where we've just had a couple people. So I can't tell you if I'm going to fill a place.
100%
right. But also, but as a musician, you're filling a place because people know there's music there. And they say, should we go here or should we go here? Let's go there because they have the live music. People will go there because there's live music. Not everyone, but people who like it.
Yeah. And the thing, and by the way, if you're hiring me to do business development, then pay me a consultant's fee. No consultant would take $100 for 4 hours to fill a restaurant. Right. If you want me to do business development for you, I'll do it, but you got to pay me a business development fee. And by the way, is your chef any good? Is your burger any good?
That's what my husband says.
He's pointing at me right now. Is your chef any good? You know what? The second time I come here, if there's less people than the first time I come here, we know it's not me.
Yes.
So... you know, so now you need to pay me more because you're diminishing my audience.
Absolutely.
The whole model is so fucked up, right?
It is. But, and then the last thing we want to do though is to start, you know, going around with picket signs and now nobody can get gigs anymore.
Is that the last thing we want to do? Or do we want to do what every other business has done successfully except ours, which is unionize.
Well, actually, I got invited to be in the musicians union, and I didn't even know it still existed, to be honest. And I talked to a woman about it, and I, you know, she wanted me to do a gig up in Albany, and you know, I was going to go be in the, but the timing didn't work, so I didn't end up doing the gig, and I didn't end up joining. But there are union gigs, but they tend to be, they are well paying. But they tend to be things that are funded by nonprofits and things. So okay. There is a musicians union, but the thing is, you know, if...
Or the other... sorry to interrupt.
You don't want restaurants to stop having live music.
They won't. They won't.
You don't think so?
No, they won't. They'll have open mics. And...
Right.
Which I love and are killing the business at the same time. I love open mics.
I'm not crazy about open mics.
You need a place to hone your craft. I get it. And that's how comedians do it. You need a place to work out how to play in front of people.
But, I mean, I've gone to some recently. I just feel
I'm not saying they're... I'm with you.
You know, you're playing on the wrong instrument and nobody knows what's going on. And
I'm with you.
The sound is not... You didn't get adjusted right. It's a lot more fun to do a gig.
Than I'm totally with you. But I also think like people starting out need...
Oh, absolutely.
You need a... You're never going to get good enough to get hired unless you work your stuff out in front.
Absolutely.
The other solution, if you don't want to unionize, is everybody get representation. I don't understand why, because the Hudson Valley geographic anomaly, there's a gazillion, you know, you and I are going to go have lunch at the diner and the person sitting next to us is probably a great musician. There's so many here. I don't understand why no agency comes up here and says, listen, you 150, 200 people who are all like, are all good enough to draw people to listen to you. I'm going to represent you. We're going to set a standard fee. And I don't understand why no agency doesn't do that.
Well, the agency would have to get all of the restaurants to comply.
Can't have these people.
The place, when I say restaurants, I mean restaurants are places that they're not official music clubs, but they do a lot of hiring.
But they're looking, but hiring somebody without a following means they're not going to bring people to you. So musicians actually have the leverage. We just don't use it. Right. If you're asking me if I'm bringing people to you, then I have the leverage. If you can't bring people here without a great musician, then guess who's in the driver's seat?
Right.
But we never look at
now,
it that way.
It is interesting. Back when I first moved to the city, there was an agent that I met who got me some gigs in hotel lobbies and things like that. And I guess he worked for the hotels.
Right.
He would get sign people up to play in those,
right?
Like the top of Rockefeller Center and the, you know, things like that, where there's pianos here and there, and piano bars used to be bigger than they are now.
Yeah,
when I was in Boston, there used to be bars everywhere.
I love piano bars,
and there's really no piano bars anymore. Yeah. I mean, there's a few, but
you got to come back.
I would love to come back. I have much to say. Always, I like to talk.
I will come back.
You can ask my husband. I love to talk.
If I had known we were going to do this, I wouldn't have booked the second show. So apologies. How do I find out about you? How do I find out about your...
Laura Evans Piano. You can find me on Facebook. We have a website which I think is glitching a bit now, but you can definitely find Laura Evans Piano on Facebook.
L-A-U-R-A.
Yep. Okay. L-A-U-R-A. Or come see me tomorrow night, or Tuesday night. Sorry. Tuesday night at Julian's in Millbrook.
Okay.
Great food. They have a bunch of vegan food on their online menu. So you can also get vegan food, but they have great other food too.
Right.
They have sushi. They have pizzas.
What time?
Amazing chef. I don't know, but I'm going to guess it's 7 to 9.
Okay.
But they'll have it on their website.
Okay, cool.
It'll be on my page.
All right, cool.
So, yeah.
And is your music on Spotify or anywhere? Do you?
No, not at this point, but I want to go later into the summer into a recording studio and record some stuff, and it will all be up on my page.
Do you have a studio yet?
No.
Can I recommend one?
It has to have a really good piano.
Can I recommend one?
Yes.
Eric Dalton. I'll when we get done.
Has a piano. Okay.
Is the best. He's a miracle engineer.
Oh, good. Okay,
he's miracle engineer. He did the Lifted project.
Okay.
And he's a miracle. So that was a live recording, one take.
Right.
And it does. Oh, good. Nobody knows that if you don't say that.
That's what I need.
I'll hook you up when we're out of here.
Great. And also, if you need dog care, dogmeadow.com.
Yes, dogmeadow.com.
Yes. We do a great job with the dogs. So, you know, it's a dog face. It's where I always wanted to board my dog.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for coming in here, man.
It's my pleasure.
And
I loved this conversation.
Oh, and I'm serious about coming back. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love the show. I'm only through like a few episodes, but we actually went on vacation. We were listening to episodes of it in the car.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah.
Oh, great. That's my pull quote. That'll be in the opening from now on. Thank you so much. That was Laura Evans. I'm John. This was Home From Here.